Coming up on today's episode of The Virtual Couch, we're going back into the archives. It's an oldie but a goodie. The topic is narcissism. The word gets bandied about left and right, to and fro. You're hearing it probably on the news and even in the people that you interact with on a daily basis. You might even be asking yourself the question, am I a narcissist? Which, tip number one, if you're asking yourself the question, chances are you're probably not. But everything you've wanted to know about narcissistic personality disorder is coming up next on The Virtual Couch. Hey, everybody, this is a very quick advertisement, and I know I'm a podcast listener. You can hit the little fast forward button probably on your podcast player, 15 seconds, 30 seconds, but bear with me. I'll try to make this quick. As a therapist myself, I obviously recommend that everybody give therapy a try, because when people ask me, do I need therapy? I don't even have to talk to you. The answer is, yes, I need therapy. Everyone could use a sounding board. Everybody could use an objective third party. Everybody could kind of dig deep a little bit and find out what are things that they've been holding back on. What are the things that they feel like they should be able to get over or shouldn't be worrying about? Shouldn't. Nobody wants to be should on. But we're all hanging on to things that would be helpful to process. And there's even things that we thought we'd achieve by now, or things that we really want to achieve so that we won't have these regrets in life. And so if there are people listening right now that might be noticing that their anxiety or their depression might be getting a tiny bit worse, especially with what's going on in the world right now, let's get to it. Let's not leave that untreated. You owe it to yourself, to those around you, your spouse, your kids, you. I mean, you owe it to you at the very least to give therapy a try. So if you're nervous about finding the right fit, if you're worried about bumping into somebody in the therapy waiting room, if you have any worries about therapy, might I recommend that you go immediately to betterhelp.com/virtualcouch. Again, that's betterhelp.com/virtualcouch, all one word, and just take a look at the world of online therapy. Go check out what over half a million, approaching a million people have already done before you, and sign up now by going to betterhelp.com/virtualcouch and get the help that you need, the help that you maybe didn't even know that you need. There's a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's counselor network, which might not be available in many areas. And especially right now with shelter in place, with social distancing, betterhelp.com is designed to do video therapy, telephone therapy. They even have appointments that you can text. So the service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account at any time and message your therapist, and you'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule these weekly video phone sessions, whatever it is, so you won't have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. Although every time I do this ad, I do want to say that my waiting room is quite lovely. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. Oftentimes, you can start communicating in under 24 hours, and the BetterHelp.com assessment, the intake alone, is brilliant. And they also work with all kinds of things. Acceptance and commitment therapy, one of my favorite techniques. Emotionally focused therapy. They work with anxiety, with OCD, with depression. So do yourself a favor. Go to betterhelp.com/virtualcouch. You'll receive 10% off your first month's services. And I can't lie. Obviously, if you're going to betterhelp.com/virtualcouch, and this is the Virtual Couch podcast, it's going to help me out a little bit too. So go check it out. You'll receive 10% off your first month's services. What are you waiting for? Just go check it out, betterhelp.com/virtualcouch. Try it today. Hey, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to episode 197 of The Virtual Couch. I'm your host, Tony Overbay. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, certified mindful habit coach, writer, speaker, husband, father of four, ultramarathon runner, and co-author of the best-selling book, He's a Porn Addict, Now What?, an expert and a former addict answer your questions, in which I play the role of the expert. And I'm creator of The Path Back, an online pornography recovery program that is helping people reclaim their lives from the harmful effects of pornography. If you or anybody that you know is struggling to put pornography behind you once and for all, and trust me, it can be done in a strength-based, hold the shame, become the person you always knew you could be way, then please head over to pathbackrecovery.com. And there you can download a short ebook that describes 5 common mistakes that people make when trying to get rid of pornography once and for all. Again, that is pathbackrecovery.com. And stop by Virtual Couch on Instagram. I'm trying to be a little more engaging there. I did a couple of therapy thoughts of the week this week on an Instagram. It's not Instagram Live. I'm a very old man. An Instagram story. There we go. And you can also find Tony Overbay, licensed marriage and family therapist, on Facebook. If you have a minute, you've enjoyed any of the Virtual Couch podcast material, please do me a favor and rate or review, subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast. I love seeing those reviews and I appreciate them so much. And stop by TonyOverbay.com. Click on courses. I have an absolutely free parenting class that's available right now. So please sign up It will make you a better parent. It will give you tools. You will walk away from that. The feedback I'm getting, I am so grateful for. I'm that guy now that's going, oh, thanks, guys. I really appreciate the feedback. But I really mean it. You're going to have some tools as soon as you walk away from that course, and share that. It is absolutely free. And welcome new listeners. The free parenting course, as a matter of fact, is being shared and passed around, which I believe is maybe what has led to an uptick in new listeners, or people just have more time on their hands. At first, the podcast numbers around the industry were said to be on the decline as people were sheltering in place, as people were at home more. But I think people are starting to just get back to trying to find some more of their routines. And if that is listening to podcasts, I think I'm seeing the numbers there. So later this morning, I'm actually going to be appearing on Good Day Sacramento, which is a local morning news program, to actually talk about the parenting program. So I am hoping that that will bring a few extra listeners along as well. So if you have found this podcast later in the day, thank you for joining me. And, you know, when I started the Virtual Couch about 2.5 years ago, one of my main goals was to put out consistent content. I mean, I wanted to put out good content. I wanted to help people have a lot more information at their hands that had to do with mental health and ways to improve your mental health and to ways to be better parents and better couples and overcome addictions and save the world and get a unicorn and a rainbow and all of those things. I mean, but one of the main goals was to put out consistent content. So I had decided one episode a week, and that episode typically comes out on Tuesdays. And sometimes if I'm feeling lucky or ultra prepared, it will go out on a Monday. But what I've tried to do more, especially over the last year or so, is release a bonus previously recorded episode later in the week, like on Thursday. And typically that's an episode that I have maybe received a lot of positive feedback on, or one that has significantly larger amount of downloads than most. And that's the case with this episode today. This is one of the first episodes that I did on narcissism. And again, it was over 2 years ago, and it has been downloaded thousands and thousands of more times, more than the average amount that each of the Virtual Couch episodes gets downloaded. And I remember this very well. You've become a bit obsessed with your numbers, I think, early on in the podcast game. And I remember when I started looking at the metropolitan areas where my episodes started being downloaded more. And I really found it ironic. I feel like for some reason, just putting out this episode on narcissism 2 years ago, that all of a sudden I noticed an upswing in downloads from Washington, D.C., New York City, and New Jersey. For some reason, that then kind of brought the Virtual Couch into those markets. And I don't know, maybe one can draw their own conclusions there. But anytime I do anything to do with narcissism, the numbers are there. So let me get to the content today. Again, this was 2 years ago. It's everything you've wanted to know about narcissism, narcissistic personality disorder. And if you have questions, if you have ideas for a topic, if you're interested in having me come speak in your area, any of those things, shoot me an email at contact@tonyoverbay.com. All right, let me get to this episode, Narcissism 101, everything you ever wanted to know about narcissistic personality disorder. The topic that I want to talk about today, and you've probably already seen it in the title, but it's narcissism, narcissistic personality disorder. What is narcissism? It is coming up so much. And when I go back to episode 4 of the Virtual Couch, where I was just a baby in the podcasting world, I can't even imagine going back and listening to that. I feel like I was probably just stumbling all over my words, but author Tina Fuller did the heavy lifting there. She's the author of the book, It's My Turn, which is about her growing up with a narcissistic mother. And again, that is one of those where when you kind of look back, and I think people are looking for resources about what is narcissism and are they, you know, are they in a relationship with a narcissist? People just start to do a deep dive and are just looking for all the information that they can find. And I highly recommend that episode. It's episode 4. And Tina has it's called Narcissistic Parent Answers, I believe. And that's a Facebook group that is 40,000-50,000 strong. And there's really good posts every day that kind of talk about what to look for, that sort of thing. So today's topic, narcissism. Okay. I want to start out and I'm kind of zeroing in on, we're going to talk about it from a bit of a clinical standpoint, and then we're going to talk about it, more of kind of what, maybe signs of narcissism, things that you can kind of look out for. And, first of all, so kind of an overview of narcissistic personality disorder. And I think even when we go there, a lot of times I'll ask a client, you know, hey, are you familiar with what a personality disorder even is? And so maybe we start there. So a personality disorder, there's a word here that I hang on to for dear life. It's rigid and we're going to go back to that word a lot, but rigid and unhealthy pattern of thinking, functioning, behaving, or trouble perceiving and relating to situations and people. So kind of say that again, rigid and unhealthy pattern of thinking. Rigid, I mean, that's going to become pretty key here. But rigid pattern of thinking, functioning, behaving, and trouble perceiving and relating to situations and people. I also like to add in there, people with narcissism lack self-awareness, or actually even back to personality disorders. I believe a lot of the personality disorder, what I'm looking for as a therapist, are people self-aware? Are they even aware that there is a problem? A lot of the times as a couples therapist, when I see someone with a personality disorder, it's not that they have necessarily come in for treatment, but almost as a last resort, their partner has gotten them to come to therapy because they're fairly convinced that there's really either nothing wrong or the problem lies with the partner. There's not this just natural empathy and kind of owning the problem of, you're right, there's something wrong, we need to work on this. It's fine, I'll go to therapy. You know, if that's what you want, I'll go to therapy, but it's not going to be good. It's not going to help. And so a lot of times that's when I get to see someone with a personality disorder. And so now moving forward in this podcast, that's when I get to see someone who exhibits these symptoms or signs of narcissism. And I want you to know too, I'm going to be really careful because, you know, I carry a pretty heavy caseload. I think I've admitted here on the podcast that I see about 20 couples a week. And then I do a lot with, again, pornography addiction, compulsive sexual behavior, and then just help a lot of people with good old anxiety, depression, those sort of things. But I feel like there are a fair amount of, with the couples I work with, where there is one of the partners that is worried or concerned that their partner might be a narcissist or might have a personality disorder. So I don't want you to think that I'm going to try to dig up any examples of things that are going on in therapy right now, because that wouldn't be ethical, would it? So let me kind of go over. This is from the Mayo Clinic. It says, narcissistic personality disorder, one of the several types of personality disorders, is a mental condition in which people have an inflated sense of their own importance, a deep need for excessive attention and admiration, troubled relationships, a lack of empathy for others. But behind the mask of extreme confidence lies a fragile self-esteem that's vulnerable to the slightest criticism. A narcissistic personality disorder causes problems in many areas of life, such as relationships, work, school, financial affairs. People with narcissistic personality disorder may be generally unhappy and disappointed when they're not given the special favors or admiration they believe they deserve. They may find their relationships unfulfilling, and others may not enjoy being around them. And I think that at times can be an understatement. Treatment for narcissistic personality disorder centers around talk therapy. And we'll get more into that, I think, as the podcast goes along. If you go back to that episode 4 of The Virtual Couch, where I talk with author Tina Fuller of It's My Turn, I think that's the first point where I kind of refer to a narcissist as a unicorn in therapy. Again, a narcissist isn't going to come in and say, I think I'm a narcissist. And I think that's one of the things I actually put on here as one of the first things. Let's harken back to my story of my 1 hour shopping pass at Disneyland, where you need to get the fudge first. You know, eat the dessert first. Let's kind of go right there. If you're listening to this, I feel like I'm about to do a Jeff Foxworthy bit of, you know, you might be a redneck. I'm not doing that, but I'm going to say, if you're listening to this podcast and you're scratching your head and you found this because you're like, man, am I a narcissist? You are not a narcissist. One of the big traits there is that people that have narcissistic personality disorder, again, it's this, here we go, rigid and unhealthy pattern of thinking. Rigid meaning that it's, no, they are right. They are correct. This is why it's the unicorn. The narcissist doesn't schedule up an appointment and say, hey, I want to come in and kind of explore my narcissism. Now, have I ever worked with a narcissist where we have brought some of that self-awareness to the table? Yes. Just, you know, it's fairly rare. I mean, I'm encouraging authenticity and vulnerability in my practice. And so me being authentic and honest, it's pretty rare. When it works, it is amazing and beautiful. And I think of, 3 people come to mind right now where, you know, they're all, I feel like it gets to this point where you build a little bit of rapport with the narcissist, and where then it's never this like, you know what, Tony, I've been reading, and I think I am a narcissist. You know, typically it's kind of like, fine, let's just say for the sake of an argument that I'm a narcissist, whatever, right? What would I do? And then at that point, you know, now you can kind of do some work. So, this is years and years ago. One of the first people that I ever worked with that kind of brought that to the table, that saying, fine, whatever, you know, this is what I'm hearing. If this is true, I actually do want to save my relationship. So what do I do? And then we would actually kind of process events. We would look at what his reaction was or inside. And then he had to kind of trust, and I'm not trying to claim that I know everything, but he would be like, he would say, what's a normal reaction? And one of these had to do with, his wife, worked around a lot of children for her job. And she would come home and really bring a lot of that, you know, concern or worry or sadness to the table. And when she wanted to talk to him about it, he would just like, I don't know why you're getting so upset. They're not your kids. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, that's your work. You leave that alone. There was no empathy there, right? Because he had his rigid pattern of thinking, which was, you know, you detach, this doesn't affect me. I don't need to worry about this. So it was kind of funny. I mean, this is a very successful person. And he said, you know, what do you do in that situation? And I almost felt kind of silly saying, you know, you like hold her, hug her, let her talk it through. You know, man, it's empathy. Hey, tell me more about that. That's got to be hard. You know, what do you do with that? I mean, those kind of things. And I remember even that he literally had an eye roll, and I was able to say, all right, I'm seeing the eye roll. I don't think you're buying what I'm selling. But then we ended up having just a fantastic relationship. And I still am in contact with this person on occasion. And I think he's in a good place. And my other examples that come to mind are similar to that. And I have to tell you, if you're a Seinfeld fan, there's an episode where, I need to go back and watch it at some point. It's been, 10, 15 years since I saw it, but where the character George Costanza in essence just says, okay, I'm going to do the opposite of everything that I want to do. That I normally want to do. And I think there was a line there at some point when he's meeting a woman and he lets her know that he's short and overweight, bald, unemployed, and lives with his mother. And the woman's like, hey, sounds pretty good. Right. And then that led him to, you know, he got a better job and these sort of things. And so I literally had one client where that was kind of the approach we took. And he was so, you know, fun to work with where he just said, okay, you're not going to do the opposite of everything that I want to do. Because what's funny is that opposite is oftentimes empathy. Because if there's this rigid thinking that this person thinks that they know what life is all about and everyone else is just wrong, and they maintain that as long as they hold tight to their, you know, rigid pattern of thinking that other people will eventually get to understand, the opposite of that is, okay, let's just say for the sake of argument, maybe I'm not right about everything. I guess I will listen to this person and try to validate their experience. Okay. So I'm kind of, I said, hey, we'll get to that later. And we just got to it. Right. So, let me go over a little bit of the signs and symptoms of narcissistic personality disorder, and the severity of these vary. I do view this as a little bit on a spectrum. You can have people that have narcissistic personality disorder traits or tendencies. And then there are people where maybe perhaps it's just full blown narcissistic personality disorder. So some of these have an exaggerated sense of self-importance. You know, I always say that, they're pretty sure that they are a really big deal. They have a sense of entitlement and require constant excessive admiration. And again, I want you to know that the danger of even doing a podcast like this is like some people are going to go, I kind of feel like I'm a little bit of a big deal or I do require some admiration. I must be a narcissist. Remember, when that I must be a narcissist comes in, that's the check where you're like, whoo, not a narcissist, right? We're all going to have some of these things. But again, this rigid, unhealthy pattern of thinking and functioning that will not waver or be willing to own any of our own stuff or be willing to look at things from a different perspective is the key. Expected to be recognized as superior, sometimes even without achievements that warrant it. Exaggerate achievements and talents. This is a good one. I have heard stories that are just amazing from narcissists where it is, for me personally, a lot of them tend to revolve around sports, I guess, because there's not really a way to go back and check some of that at times where you find out that people just claim to do some amazing things. This is not a story about a client, so I'm not going to feel too bad telling this one. But I remember this was over 20 years ago, and I had I tried to walk on and play a little bit of college baseball and got a little tiny dose of that. So, but I had a really nice high school career. I feel like now I'm about to say, you should see my trophies, right? But my point is that I knew baseball. I did. I was a big baseball fan, and I was meeting with this person. They had kind of stopped by the apartment shortly after my wife and I were married, and they were just kind of checking up on us for something. And the guy had said, I don't know, I think I maybe was wearing a baseball hat because I was trying to hide my early male pattern baldness at the time. There's something that's kind of ironic. They always see the glare on my head.
But I think he mentioned something about baseball, and I was like, I love baseball. You know, I had a little taste of it in college, and and I'll never forget this. He's like, oh, I was drafted. And I'm like, oh, wow. And I mean, I was still pretty young at this point, just fresh out of college. And I was like, wow, this guy, man, he tasted the big leagues. So I said, well, okay, what, you know, who'd you play for? And he's like, oh, you know, I got drafted, but he's like, I didn't play. You know, I decided I didn't want to. First of all, I thought, okay, if you're the guy that has worked your whole life to get to even the opportunity to get drafted, you're not just going to be like, you know, I don't know. It doesn't sound like very much fun to me. But then even better, when I pressed him a little bit, he said that he was drafted by an American League baseball team, and he had decided he wanted to play in the National League. So he just thought he'd take a pass, right? Exaggerated achievements and talents. That person went on to also express to me that he had been a runway model and had been in some magazines, had never quite find him though. Said he had copies around the house, but never quite got to him. Be preoccupied with fantasies about success, power, brilliance, the beauty, or the perfect mate. Believe that they are superior and can only associate with equally special people. And this one I get to see oftentimes as well. It's funny sometimes. So here's the dilemma with a therapist at times. You're not going to get any work done with a narcissist unless you can really truly build rapport. So, you know, I can't tell you how many times you'll get somebody who will walk in and I feel like they're basically kind of sizing up the joint, sizing up the therapist to see if they are worthy of their time. And so I get frustrated with the fact that I find myself wanting desperately to connect with the narcissist because I want to help. A lot of times I've been, you know, I'm doing couples therapy and again, I want to help so bad that I find that, okay, I'm trying to beef things up too. You know, hey, you know, I've run 200 ultra marathons or, you know, I own part of this or I did. And I feel like, okay, I'm getting caught up in that, you know. I want to make sure that, you know, they will view me as someone who they can associate with, because if not, then they're going to go home and tell their spouse, that guy's an idiot, right? He's a clown. He's not even worth our time. I know more than I, you know, he does. And that's a funny one too. I love, I can think of one experience in particular where the person came in and they were, hey, look, I've studied psychology. You know, I know everything that you're going to tell me. And I wanted to be like, okay, so, you know, and here I'm going to sound like a narcissist to you right now, podcast listener, but then that's the part where I want to say, hey, so, all right, you're just kind of discounting the, you know, couple of years, getting the master's in counseling, the 6 months of a practicum site of, you know, free therapy at a clinic, the 3,000 hours of supervision and the constant trainings, but you've read a couple of psychology books. You kind of, so I guess we're on the same plane, huh? So it is funny. And recently I even had somebody that I reached out to and I was working with their spouse and I said, hey, I'd love to bring you in. And, you know, I really would love to hear your take on your spouse that I'm working with. And, that's part of my process. I let them know that I've been doing this for a long time. And this person just was like, you know, I know a lot about psychology and I really don't think that's necessary. And boy, it was all I could do not to just respond back with, anyway, you know where I'm going with that. So they believe they're superior. Monopolize conversations and belittle or look down on people they perceive as inferior. A lot of kind of putting down. I hear from spouses a lot where, you know, man, I kind of feel like everywhere we go, this person's, you know, my spouse is putting someone down. And if you kind of think about that, you know, it's that classic or cliched, putting someone down, you know, in their mind elevates them to some higher status. They expect special favors, unquestioning compliance with their expectations. I keep relating this to therapy. I guess that's the whole purpose of this podcast, right? But I have a cool little clock I'll have to bring over here at some point. Okay, here's my ADD brain. If you look back in the corner there, I've got a really cool 50-minute timer that my wife got me for Christmas that sits on the back. I have literally had people email feedback when they watch the video of the podcast and say, why don't you do the timer? You know, so I'm going to do that right now. Hang on. Okay. I'm back. So expecting special favors. Here's where my train of thought went, right? There's one of those skills I tried to teach in episode 26 on EFT, where my train of thought went right there was, I have had multiple narcissists in a conversation here. I've got this little timer that holds boundaries. It's a visual representation of a 50-minute hour. And I set that right on my counter and then clients know that, hey, I respect boundaries so that so that we can get to the next client. I respect everyone's time. And I'll tell you, I feel like a narcissist will often almost see that timer, that clock go. And then at that point, they will say, you know, they just want to keep they want to keep talking. And I think it's because they expect you. Well, I understand you do those boundaries for everybody else, but you know, what I'm telling you here is pretty important. So at times, you know, I find myself having to hold those boundaries even more, which ironically, when I'm working with clients who may be in a relationship with a narcissist, that's a lot of what we're trying to do, is get them to really hold those boundaries, hold boundaries that will kind of keep them feeling sane or keep them feeling safe. And other characteristics or symptoms: take advantage of others to get what they want, have an inability or unwillingness to recognize the needs and feelings of others. That's a huge one, because again, if we go back to that, their rigid and unhealthy pattern of thinking, functioning, and behaving, then it's, you know, that rigidity of thought is basically this place of saying, there's no reason for me to think of what someone else is going through because I am correct. I mean, that's at the core. And, you know, again, another plug for episode 26, the EFT, that is the least productive thing that you can do in a relationship, is to say, look, if I just hold my line, eventually my partner will understand that I am right. We have to double down on empathy and understand what our partner's experience is. A couple more symptoms: be envious of others and believe that others envy them. I think that one's kind of fun too. Behave in arrogant or haughty manner, coming across as conceited, boastful, and pretentious, and insist on having the best of everything, the best office, the best car, you know, the best everything. And at the same time, people with narcissistic personality disorder have trouble handling anything that they perceive as criticism. And that's where I start to see the work get difficult in therapy. I'm teaching, I'm preaching, I'm on my soapbox about EFT, about emotional bids, about being vulnerable and open, and then about turning toward your partner and going all in on awareness to understand what your partner's experience is. And that's where, you know, if you listen to that episode, I'm saying, turn off that part of your brain that is going into fixing and judgment mode and just listen to your partner. And I find that when I'm working with people that struggle with narcissistic personality disorder, or even traits of narcissism, they cannot turn that part of their brain off because all they hear that is criticism, and they are not willing to own their part or even respect the feelings or emotions of another because of this rigid thought process. So they become impatient or angry when they don't receive special treatment. They can have significant interpersonal problems, feel easily slighted if someone isn't willing to put in this extra time or listen to them, have difficulty regulating emotions and behaviors, react with rage or contempt, or try to belittle another person to make themselves feel superior. And I feel like those two things go along pretty well too. If we kind of go back to, I think I did an episode on anger long ago, and anger is a way to try to take control of a situation. So when somebody feels criticized, hurt, blamed, or not willing to kind of take a look at what their role was, if they lack this self-awareness, one of the quickest ways to try to gain control of a situation and a conversation is to get mad, to get angry, to amp up. And I watch that here. When I'm trying to do EFT work, I feel like a partner that struggles with narcissistic personality disorder, they even in my room will immediately try to take control of the room, take control of the situation. And that often is by raising their voice, you know, that sort of thing. And that's just not productive to the work we're trying to do in therapy. And a lot of times I have to do that. I've had situations in here where I've had people that I feel struggle with this that have just, you know, they've yelled, they've told me. I've had one where he walked out. I think maybe I've told this story, but you know, he was losing control of the situation because we were asking him to be vulnerable and listen to his wife. And, you know, he stood up and he was going to leave the room and walk out. And it was one of the funniest things to me where, he tried to slam the door behind him. This was when I was working at a clinic, when I was still very, very new, very green. And as he walked out, he slammed the door behind him, but the door hit the back of his foot. So the door, he wanted it to make a big, loud noise, but instead kind of hit his foot, and then it kind of made that sound like you're giving somebody a flat on the back of their shoe. And then he still walked out and the door kind of hung there open. And I looked over at his wife and I just said, I don't think that's what he was planning on. And we kind of had a little bit of a chuckle there. And I'll skip the rest of this part on the, cause it says when to see a doctor. You know, most people with narcissistic personality disorder don't understand or recognize that this is a problem. Causes. This is a little bit insightful. I think people have this question a lot. What causes it? It's not known what causes narcissistic personality disorder. As with personality development and with other mental health disorders, the cause of narcissistic personality disorder is likely complex. That is an understatement. Narcissistic personality disorder may be linked to environment, mismatches in parent-child relationships with either excessive adoration or excessive criticism that's poorly attuned to the child's experience. Genetics, we feel like at some point we're going to learn that there are some inherited characteristics, I'm sure, involved here at some point. And then this is the kind of the burgeoning field of neurobiology, the connection between the brain and then behavior and thinking. So there's a lot of things that can go into this. And, you know, I was pretty convinced for a while there that it was just, you know, born, it was just genetics and maybe the neurobiology. But when you really start to look at the environment, you can see patterns of narcissistic behavior that span generations. And so there's some thought, and I think maybe Tina talks about it on the podcast, or it might even be in her book, where we start to look at, you know, if someone, and who knows when it started, who, you know, with the genesis of the first narcissist. But then if the narcissistic person has these rigid thought patterns, and now they have a child who is trying to naturally from the factory be a little more expressive, and they're told consistently that that's wrong, and then they try to adapt their behavior to then, you know, be the person that their parent just ultimately thinks that they have to be, when meanwhile the parent lacks complete self-awareness, that's a recipe for then this person kind of then, you know, falling in line with this rigid thinking, is that's the only way I'm going to get attention, or, you know, from my parents. So they kind of stick to that. Risk factors. And here's the, this one's on about everything I read. Narcissistic personality disorder affects more males than females, often begins in teens or early adulthood. And it says, keep in mind that although some children may show traits of narcissism, it might simply be typical of their age and doesn't mean they'll go on to develop narcissistic personality disorder. I think that's pretty important. Prevention and get help as soon as possible. Participate in family therapy to learn healthy ways to communicate. Attend parenting classes and seek guidance from therapists or social workers. I almost feel like at the end of this report, it was kind of like, yeah, you know, we're not really quite sure what to do. So we'll kind of plug in the, hey, go get help. We'll kind of put it at that. So there was there's a book by a gentleman named Keith Campbell, W. Keith Campbell. Yeah, he's a narcissism researcher. And I find that fascinating. Co-author of a book called The Narcissism Epidemic, Living in the Age of Entitlement. And he did an interview on Huffington Post. This was back in December. And so I just wanted to hit, it's, you know, of course, from a clickbait angle, they say, I think it's like 18 signs of narcissism, and you probably won't believe number, whatever, you know, however the clickbait things work. But I just wanted to touch on a few of these. Keith Campbell says, most people are sort of in the middle, though some are more extreme than others. And that's kind of what we were trying to allude to earlier. He says, people are on a continuum. There's a range of narcissism. And I do find that that's the case. And he talks about how sometimes the signs of narcissism are a little more nuanced. They're not always as obvious as the media depictions would have you believe about this raging, you know, I am king of the world versus, you know, that kind of thing. It's not always that. And it is possible, Keith Campbell says, again, narcissism researcher, it's possible to have some traits of narcissism without having full-blown clinically diagnosed narcissistic personality disorder. And I love the way in Tina's book, It's My Turn, she talks about an overt narcissist and a covert narcissist. The overt narcissist is the one that is loud and bold and out there and in your face. And the covert narcissist can actually, you know, I think can be a little more of a struggle to identify, recognize, and work with, because, the covert narcissist is the one that's, you know, kind of passive aggressively letting you know that, oh, wow, I never really had that problem. And if you would just kind of listen to me, then, you know, you would be able to do these things better. And so it's just a lot of just, you know, being able to say that they were or are better than someone else, and they don't understand what that person's really going through because they never had that problem, you know? And so that makes the person on the receiving end feel bad about themselves. And, so let me go through a few of these. I'm not going to hit all of them. Let's see, let me go to number three that he had. They can often be found in leadership roles. Not that that makes them good leaders. There's a researcher named Gene Twing, co-author in The Narcissism Epidemic with Campbell. But narcissists often find themselves in leadership positions because people who are narcissistic want to be leaders. They don't necessarily make better leaders, but they want to do it. So they're more likely to end up in those positions. I think that that's one of those things where, you know, it depends on what your goal is. If your goal is, I just want to be a CEO, you know, that might be more of what kind of they're talking about being found in leadership roles. If your goal is, I want to do the best job possible, and because of that, the fruits of my labor rise me through the ranks, and before I knew it, I was CEO. You know, that's a little more of, I'm sure that's kind of looking at this as that is not the narcissist. This one's fascinating to me too. They always manage to make the conversations about themselves. You can start talking to a person about how you have cancer, and pretty soon you're talking about their new car, Campbell explained. And man, I watch this in therapy a lot, where if I say someone puts out an emotional bid, and then their partner, I'm encouraging their partner, hey, double down on empathy. Listen to what your partner's saying. This is your partner. This is your spouse. You care about them. You love about them. You love them. And you want to know more about them. That's what this is all about. That's why we're here in marriage therapy. Listen, I can give that entire speech. The person will, but then the narcissist is going to say, right. No, I understand all that. But you know what they don't understand is I've done this and I've done this. And I'm like, oh my goodness, so it is. It's kind of making about them. One of the greatest stories of this, I'm speaking with a friend of mine at one point. He was talking about a person that he had worked with that was a narcissist, and he said the guy would literally get agitated and uncomfortable when the conversation would go away from him, until finally at one point this person literally said, "Hey, can we get back to talking about me?" And I said that was pretty funny. They're guilty of name dropping. Number six, he talks about not every story the narcissist tells is one of victory, but even the stories of tragedy or failure, there's an air of entitlement and victimization. I wrote a little note in here myself where I feel like this is where some of the manipulative aspects of a narcissist come into play. So there are times where I feel like, the narcissist's ultimate goal is to kind of take control of a situation, or prove that they are, again, amazing, or, that they are better than. So I have watched before when I feel like we have someone be vulnerable, and then a narcissist recognizes, if they say the right things, then their partner responds better. So if they say, if the narcissist in therapy at times says, wow, I've never really thought about that before, and I can really understand why that's hard for you, and you watch the partner just break down and weep because they haven't had this kind of a response, an empathetic response before. And then, we'll kind of think for a moment, hey, here's a breakthrough. But then, a couple of weeks, maybe down the road, you learn that particular conversation is brought up all the time by the narcissist saying, see, I'm doing the work, I'm doing better. But it's like, no, you did one thing. You found one way to make it look like you are trying, and now you are kind of manipulating that story. Instead of continuing to do the work, these authors say narcissists will often tell stories about themselves, sometimes repeating the same story over and over again. And many times the story will be about an instance of personal heroism or an exploit. But even when a story is of something negative that happened, it'll never be the narcissist's fault. That's the thing where again, back to this world of EFT, when I'm trying to do couples therapy and someone is a narcissist, sometimes I am just trying to set the table to kind of, a spouse, the non-narcissistic spouse, all they want to hear is that the narcissist understands at some point that, wow, I can understand why you would feel that way. My behavior wasn't good. But that part, I feel like, the narcissist really struggles with ever getting to that point, because it's like, but it wasn't their fault because of something else, something that their partner did. Look, I didn't want, I'm taking the, taking the role of the narcissist now when I've heard these kind of situations where it's, hey, look, I didn't want to have an affair, but honestly, the way you were treating me, and where that, and that is so counterproductive. That is when I have someone say, man, I can understand why that hurt. And I've never really looked at your view or your situation or knew the things that you were going through. I got to own that, right? You don't hear that from the narcissist. And that's one of the problems. Let me skip through a little bit. This one is going a little long. Number 10, they are strongly averse to criticism. While no one can honestly say they like receiving criticism, people with narcissism are hypersensitive to it. I hear this all the time of you'll hear this, no, you don't get it. If you're criticizing the narcissist, they're like, you don't understand, it's like, again, they go back to this rigid, grandiose sense of thought where they just are saying, if you understood my situation, you would understand that I am the victim. I own nothing in this situation. And, because they are criticism, is it fair to say that's their kryptonite? They're going to push it away with all they can. And this, I put two stars beside this next point. Excuses are a narcissist's best friend. Narcissists tend to externalize blame. That's key. Pinning the blame on everyone but themselves. That's the part where I don't know if you'll ever hear the narcissist say, my bad. It's always like, even, and again, I watch them in couples therapy where It's like, they're like, okay, I totally hear her and what she is saying, but it's not my fault. You know, it was this or this, or, and I know that it would be easy for me to say that it's my problem, but it's not. That's the whole, you guys have to understand. And as they become passionate. And I think that's the part where, you know, that's where I start to kind of sit back and just kind of take this more of a flat affect and just listening, because, you know, I feel like a narcissist is so good over time. That's been how they have survived, is if they sell this story enough that eventually people go, okay, fine, maybe you're right. And this isn't even on here, but I want to bring that up. And I think that Tina and I talked about this again back in episode 4, but that term gaslighting breaks my heart. Gaslighting is where, if someone brings up an emotional bid, you know, if they say, you know, man, I got to be honest, you know, I feel like you don't spend enough time with, you know, enough time with me. If I have a spouse say that, by the time that conversation's done, the spouse who asked that is now feeling bad. They're feeling like they're crazy, because the narcissistic partner is going to turn that into, you know, you don't think I don't want to, you know, but with your spending habits, the amount of time I have to be at work, I mean, I really can't even believe you're saying that, because it obviously is clear that you have no idea how hard I work for this family, or do you even realize, you know, the things that I'm going through. And it's like, see, they just turned it to them. So now the person that put that emotional bid out, the spouse that said, you know, I feel like I would like to spend more time with you, now they feel bad about themselves, which again, that is the opposite thing I'm trying to do in couples therapy. That's the opposite thing of EFT, which is the evidence-based modality that helps couples get better. I want somebody to be able to say, I miss you. I feel like we don't spend enough time together. And then their partner to look at them and say, okay, you know, give me everything that you're thinking about right now. You know, tell me about what that's like for you. And then acknowledging that and going, wow, okay, I can understand that. And then even in a healthy way, be able to respond with, because here's where I was coming from. I felt like, you know, I felt like you were, you wanted me to be away from the house, or I felt like, you know, the work I was doing was ultimately, you know, our goal, or I felt like we were connected, or, and so then we can have growth. But when it's turned around, this phrase gaslighting, when the person who's putting out the emotional bid, by the time they're done, when they feel like the idiot, that's narcissistic personality disorder. That's narcissistic behavior. And it breaks my heart. I mean, you know, I have so many examples that I'm in my head right now that I'm trying to quickly, you know, change up, because I don't want to kind of say anything with around any of the couples I'm working with now, but where people will say, you know, I just want to do this, you know, some hobby, some thing, some career, some dream or hope. And then that is turned against them to kind of say, I can't believe you're saying that. Like, you know, and then, you know, do you know what that's like for me to hear that? That tells me you don't respect me, or you don't whatever. And then the person's like, man, I shouldn't have said a thing, you know? And so the person starts to withdraw. They start to lose their sense of self. And again, back to that breaks my heart. Kind of the cliched way to talk about gaslighting is, you know, if I say, hey, the sky is blue today, isn't it? And the narcissist can be like, you know, like, seriously? I mean, that's blue to you, you know? And by the time you're done, you're finally like, okay, I guess I really never really knew what blue was. I mean, I guess it's purple. And I don't know, I give up. You're right, it's purple. You know, and the narcissist is like, yeah, you know, that's all right. They get my point. They see what I'm talking about. So that was a narcissist, excuses are a narcissist's best friend. 12, they leave a trail of wreckage behind them, you know, for the sake of time. I think that one's pretty self-explanatory. Although it does, you know, I do want to talk about this. Campbell, this is that author Campbell says, does this person have a history of bad relationships and work experience? Consider that a red flag. With narcissist CEOs, for instance, you'll see that they have gone into companies, kind of wrecked them and moved on to something else. Campbell explains in relationships, they may have infidelity, which destroys that relationship. And then they'll often move on to another one. Because again, they have that rigid thinking, that lack of empathy or compassion, that lack of self-awareness. And so, and then that lack of accountability. So if it was an affair, then it, well, not my fault, you know, something that she did. And in Campbell's work, he says in that vein, they may be more likely to cheat, but that's because they put, the narcissist won't put the feelings of the partner above his or her own. So, okay. A couple more. Everything is personal, particularly in quieter narcissists. There may not be signs of overt self-reference and promotion, but there's a defensiveness and a reactive anger if they're not recognized or if they can't get it their way. I put a little star by this one. If you do something to the narcissist that they don't like, it means you're against them or you don't understand them. It's not a, hey, you know, I may have done something wrong. It's like, you have now attacked him, you know, that you have now just clearly, you know, drawn your line in the sand against that narcissist. So, the narcissist feels like you are against him if you do something that they don't like. And here we go. Number 15, a narcissistic person probably has no idea that he or she is a narcissist. It says, and I love the way that the Kierzan, the other author, talked about this. Narcissism in itself is sort of a double whammy, not just because you have disturbances or belief that you're special in some way more than others, but because those things in themselves will prevent you from seeing that you have these problems. And the more shy narcissists who may also gain experience symptoms of depression or anxiety, those other things may spur them to get professional help. So if, you know, a covert narcissist may go get help for depression, and you might find some narcissistic traits there that are stopping them from getting help. But this overt, the grandiose people, because they feel superior, because they may even have initial success, they are very unlikely to seek treatment. He explains, it would only be after they develop so many problems where they ask themselves, I feel so great. I know I'm awesome. Why did everybody leave me? I love that quote from this author, Strablank Campbell, right? I feel so great. I know I'm awesome. Why in the heck did everybody leave me? That, you know, that's maybe the other version of when you're going to see somebody. Number 16, you find yourself resorting to flattery just to maintain the peace with the narcissist. And it says, while the best way to deal with a narcissist, and this is according to that, the book from Campbell, I know this is Twinge, the co-author, while the best way to deal with a narcissist is just to cut the cord and run, there are certain circumstances where you have no choice but to deal, Twinge says. Maybe the best narcissist is a family member, or maybe it's your boss. In these cases, flattery is the best way to avoid conflict. And again, I know I've used that phrase, breaks my heart, but now, you know, sure, at work, it's learning to play the game, you know, but when you're working with an individual, you're learning, you're trying to teach boundaries, you're trying to teach them not to engage in those toxic conversations that are just going to end up being used against them, because that's the part that lowers the spouse's self-esteem. And here we go. This one ends as well, that men are more likely to be narcissists than women. Says that, and the level of narcissism is higher among today's millennials than previous generations at similar ages, Twinge adds. So kind of interesting there, right? I think that, and I wondered if that was kind of the underlying theme that a lot of people were hearing as we talked about this, was those darn millennials, right? The sense of entitlement, a little bit different, you know, but if we look at that range, like the continuum, the spectrum of narcissism or narcissistic personality disorder, as Campbell talked about in that book, then you can, yeah, sure, maybe the millennials are trending more towards narcissistic traits. But overall, we're kind of looking at that. If you think you are a narcissist, then you are not. If you are in a relationship with a narcissist, please seek help, even just for yourself, to be able to understand that you are not crazy. Long-term exposure to narcissism, and I'm kind of making this up on the fly, may be detrimental to your health because you start to question yourself. When I work with people who are in relationships with narcissists, I beg them to double down on self-care. Go back and listen to my podcast about emotional baseline, because you have to get your own emotional baseline up to a place where then you can be the best you can be for your kids or your job or your family or that sort of thing. And you have to have your baseline of emotions high enough that you will not continually engage in these, again, toxic conversations that will leave you feeling like the crazy one or bad or that sort of thing. Go seek help, please. Even just to talk to a professional and throw it out there. If you feel like your spouse might suffer from narcissistic personality disorder, you can say whatever you want in therapy, you know, and you can sort that out. You can look through this, listen to this podcast, tell your therapist to listen to this podcast and say, man, I hear a lot of these things. I'm wondering about that. But do the research. I do find a lot of people that aren't even familiar. It's funny, in my world, I deal with somebody with narcissism every day, in on my couch at some point, or some days multiple people. And so I live in this world of personality disorders. But then at times when I get a person who comes in, and they may have been married, you know, a couple of years, they might have been married 20 years to a narcissist and never even were really aware that that was a thing. They just started to feel like over time that they were crazy, you know, but it's not a healthy relationship. Oftentimes people said, man, I dreamed of this one type of this particular relationship. And, one where we were friends and we laughed together and we shared experiences And instead, I feel like anytime I bring something up, I'm made to feel dumb. And I, you know, and it's all about him and, you know, those sort of things. And, that's not, I mean, I get to, I'm going to throw down my card as I get to play normal police a little bit here. That's not normal. That's not the relationship that we want. It's not the relationship you deserve. So please seek help. Okay. I'm rambling now, but thank you for sticking with me on this journey. It probably went longer than I think. You can see the sand and the glass there. So going down significantly. But I'm passionate about this. I want people to be their best selves. I do feel like if in the right situation or circumstances, the narcissist can get help too. Again, I know I call them unicorns, but I've seen some unicorns and there can be some work there, but, boy, they have to buy into the work. They have to see that they may lose their family or jobs or that sort of thing because of that behavior. And then, hopefully they can build some good rapport with the therapist and they can say, fine, you know, let's just say for the sake of argument, maybe I am a narcissist. What do I do with that? And then we can kind of let some of the work begin. Thank you for taking the time. If you're involved in someone with a narcissistic personality disorder, go to couples therapy. Sometimes, again, I hope that that's what you're hearing here. You have to set some good boundaries and do this for you, for your kids, for your relationship, for your emotional, mental health. And then go back and listen to that Emotional Baseline podcast and double down on self-care. All right. Thank you for your time. And as per usual, I'm going to take us out with the wonderful Aurora Florence and the song It's Wonderful. I will see you next time on The Virtual Couch.
Compressed emotions flying past, our heads and out the other end. The pressures of the daily grind, it's wonderful. Elastic waste and rubber. Explode.